Hi, this is Dave. Welcome to our live stream for Tesla's Q3 earnings. So here's what's going to happen today. Tesla is slated to release their Q3 shareholder letter after market close, which market just closed a few minutes ago. And it's kind of unclear exactly when Tesla releases. Sometimes they release like right away, like a couple minutes after market close. Sometimes it takes, you know, 10, 15, 20, or even 30 minutes. One time it took like over an hour, I think. I think that's when the CFO switched from Deepak to, and he didn't give over the password to some site. So anyways, it's kind of unclear, but what we'll do here in this live stream is we're going to anticipate and wait for the shareholder letter. And I'm going to go ahead and refresh this screen. So if you go to ir.tesla.com, this is where Tesla releases their shareholder letter. Now I want you to go ahead and if you see the shareholder letter before I see it, go ahead and put in the comments. So we have a live chat going right now in this session. Just go ahead and put, you know, it's out or something. And then I'll go ahead and I'll know, and then I'll refresh. And so here's what we're going to do. Once the shareholder letter comes out, I'll go ahead and I will in detail go through the whole shareholder letter with you guys. And so I think it's, you know, it's helpful sometimes to have an extra set of eyes and some extra kind of perspective on the shareholder letter. What I'll do is, here's my strategy when I look at the letter. When it comes out, I'm going to first look at the highlights that Tesla highlights. Then number two, I'm going to go into their financial statement and look at just their revenue, their gross margin, their gross profit, their operating expenses, and their GAAP and non-GAAP profits. And so I'm going to look at that. And then I'm going to go into, I'm going to skip over really quick into their guidance. And in their guidance, I'm going to go ahead and see if they've, you know, affirmed 500,000 vehicles or not, and, you know, if it's kind of vague or if it's very specific. And then I'll go back to the shareholder letter, and then I'll read the entire shareholder letter and share my thoughts kind of line by line, section by section. So it actually will be a kind of a lengthy time, but we'll take kind of 5 minutes to do a blitz, a blitz run on the shareholder letter. Someone's saying that it's out. I'm on Tesla IR dot ir.tesla.com. Let's look at Tesla's stock price right now. All right. I guess it's not out right now. Here's the stock price. It's relatively unchanged right now at $423. So my guess is it's not out right now, the Tesla shareholder letter. So go ahead. And what we'll do is, I'll do a 5 minute, or actually it'll be a few minutes, while I'll quickly just, you know, do a blitz kind of overview of the main things. And then I'll go back and do another run of the shareholder letter and do it more in specific. I'll go ahead and answer any questions. And then we'll go ahead and we'll pause. And by that time, the earnings call will be almost, you know, ready to go. And I'll go ahead and I'll live stream the audio for the audio call. And what I'll do is also put the stock ticker, the after hour stock ticker, on the screen as we live stream the audio for the conference call. So it's going to be kind of interesting. All right, here it is. It's out. Let's take a look at the stock price. See, there's all these algorithms that just, you know, that will scan the letter and will quickly determine, you know, what's the movement in the stock price. All right, it's relatively same. So anyways, let's go ahead and we're going to go ahead and download this this update. And here's what I'm going to do. Cash. So Tesla's increased their cash position to $14.5 billion. That was expected. Cash flow of $1.4 billion. That was also expected. Profitability, $809 million GAAP operating income. Wait, that's operating income. Sorry. The net income is $331 million. And that actually is in line with my expectations. I was expecting $300 to $400 million in GAAP income. And actually a non-GAAP income of $874 million. So this is completely in line. And the SBC, the stock-based compensation increased to $543 million. That's because of Elon's CEO award. So basically everything is in line kind of with what we've expected. Let's go ahead and look at the financial statement really quick. The auto revenues were $7.5 billion, and actually the total revenues was $8.7 billion. So that's slightly higher than I expected. GAAP gross margin is 23.5%. That's very good. We have operating margin of 9%, actually much higher than I expected. And then we have the net income. GAAP is 331 and non-GAAP is 874. So everything is in line with my expectations. Tesla delivered a great quarter, it appears. And let's go to now the guidance section. And it says, we have the capacity to install and produce and deliver 500,000 vehicles this year. While achieving this goal has become more difficult, delivering 500,000 vehicles in 2020 remains our target. Achieving this target depends primarily on quarter-over-quarter increases in Model Y and Shanghai production, as well as further improvements in logistics delivery efficiency at higher levels. All right, so... basically they're reaffirming their $500,000 guidance, and they aren't being completely confident with it. They're kind of having a way out. They're saying, hey, there's different things that have to go right with Model Y and Shanghai, but they're saying they have a chance. So this is, not completely unexpected either way. So it's generally a good sign that Tesla has affirmed their guidance. They're saying they're currently on track to build Model Y in Shanghai and Berlin and Texas. And on track to start deliveries from each location in 2021 and semi-deliveries in 2021. All right, so, that's expected too, right? We know that Austin and Berlin and semi and, Cybertruck, all this stuff is slated for 2021. So there's no surprises, really big surprises here. Tesla delivered a fantastic quarter. As expected, $300 to $400 million by GAAP profit. They reaffirmed their guidance. I don't see any red flags immediately. So here's what we're going to do now. Take a quick look at the market reaction again. Here you have the market reacting positively. After our price is $440. And I think overall, a lot of times when you remove uncertainty, right, with quarterly earnings, and it's very just like, shaky, people don't know what direction it's going to go. The market kind of, investors kind of tend to wait until after the earnings to really figure out what's going on in terms of, let's say, if they want to add more money into the stock. And so because this uncertainty has now been lifted and, hey, it's a great quarter, right? Now there's actually, I think, some relief that, hey, actually, it's a great quarter. So let's go ahead and refresh again at 440. Okay, here's what we're going to do now. This is a shareholder letter. I am going to do this thing where I'm going to actually go step by step with the shareholder letter. We'll go ahead and try this. All right, so what we're going to do is I'll go ahead and go through each section of the shareholder letter. We'll go ahead and also look at the market reaction afterwards as well, and I'll take some questions. All right, so going back to the highlights, and I'll go through kind of each section more slowly here. So we went through cash. They've increased to $14.5 billion. My question for Elon and Tesla team is, what are they going to do with this $14.5 billion? I think it's great that they can acquire companies. They have a lot of safety cushion, et cetera. I wonder what plans they have. Now, profitability, this is fantastic that they have the $331 million in GAAP profit. And then operations, they have record vehicle deliveries, profitability, and free cash flow, just as, I shared in my last video. They have a build-out of three new factories on three continents as planned. And the first step of full self-driving beta rollout started in October 2020. All right. So it says the third quarter of 2020 was a record quarter on many levels. Over the past four quarters, we generated $1.9 billion of free cash flow while spending $2.4 billion on new production capacity, service centers, supercharging locations, and other capital investments. While we took an additional stock-based compensation expense in Q3, our GAAP operating profit reached 9.2%. We are increasingly focused on our next phase of growth. Our most recent capacity expansion investments are now stabilizing, with Model 3 in Shanghai achieving its design production rate and Model Y in Fremont expected to reach capacity level production soon. During this next phase, we are implementing more ambitious architectural changes to our products and factories. In other words, they're saying they're redesigning, right, the chassis, right? They're making basically the whole front end, the whole back end of the Model Y one piece. And then they're also probably going to apply that change to the Model 3, as they shared in Battery Day. We also are expanding our scope of manufacturing to include additional areas of insourcing, so they're going to be more vertically integrated. At Battery Day, we announced our plans to manufacture battery cells in-house to aid our rapid expansion plan. We believe our new 4680 cells are an important step forward to reduce cost and improve capital efficiency while improving performance. We continue to see growing interest in our car storage and solar products and remain focused on cost efficiency while growing capacity as quickly as possible. All right, so here are the financials again. And we have $7.6 billion in auto revenue. Total revenue is $8.7 billion. Operating expenses is $1.25. Actually, that's pretty much in line exactly with kind of our expectations that I shared earlier in my other video. Operating margin 9%, and then you have a GAAP profit of 331, non-GAAP of 875. And then let's go further into a financial summary here. So total revenue grew 39% year over year, and the main reason why it grew 39% is because Tesla delivered a whopping, I think it's 48,000 cars more than the previous quarter. So yeah, revenue is going to grow amazingly. This was achieved mainly through growth in vehicle deliveries, as well as growth in other parts of our business. At the same time, vehicle average selling price, ASP, declined slightly compared to the same period last year, as our product mix continues to shift from Model S and X to the more affordable Model 3 and Y. So that's expected, right? They're going to sell a lot more Model 3 and Model Y. Okay, so the operating income improved in Q3 to $809 million. So operating income is basically the income if you minus gross profit and you take gross profit and you minus operating expenses, right? You're left with operating income. And so there you have a 9.2% operating margin. Now, I think this is actually one of the bullish signs, a big bullish sign, that Tesla has growing operating margins, especially as they grow revenue. And so I wonder if actually analysts might start upgrading Tesla stock if they can foresee this operating margin continuing to grow even to 15% in the coming years. Elon might surprise people and even say a higher target long term. This profit level was reached while we took increased stock-based compensation expense in Q3 attributable to the 2018 CEO award, of which $290 million was triggered by a significant increase in share price and market capitalization and a new operational milestone becoming probable. Now, I discussed this in my previous video. In Q2, Tesla booked like $167 million in stock-based compensation related to Elon's CEO plan. And I expected about $100 million in addition to that, so close to $300 million, which is right about what Tesla allocated. This positive profit impacts included strong volume, better fixed cost absorption, and continued cost reduction. Now for Q4, what's interesting is I think the stock-based compensation related to Elon Musk will actually be lower, because in Q3, he qualified for two tranches, which is actually a lot. And at Q4, you know, won't be two. I haven't looked at the details, might be one, but nevertheless, it's going to be less than $290 million. It might be back down to like $150 million or so. So that's an additional $150 million in GAAP profit. Plus you get the additional revenue, right, that Tesla is going to have from delivering more cars, perhaps even up to 180,000 cars. So you're looking at a blowout Q4 quarter next year, in my opinion. All right, let's go to cash. A quarter end cash and cash equivalents increased by $5.9 billion. So the reason is they did a $5 billion cap raise, right? But they also Also had cash flow, operating cash flow as well, free cash flow. So they have $14.5 billion driven mainly by the recent capital raise of $5 billion. The average price of this offering was $449, combined with free cash flow of $1.4 billion, partially offset by reduced use of working capital credit lines. Since our days payable outstanding are higher than days sales outstanding, revenue growth results in additional cash generation from working capital. Okay, so what that means is basically the more Tesla can ramp their products quicker, they get more income and revenue because people pay for the products and then they pay their suppliers later, let's say, you know, 60 or 90 day, whatever timetable. So the faster Tesla grows, actually, the better their cash flow situation looks. All right, here's their operational summary. So we know that Tesla already released the delivery number and production number, right? 139,000 deliveries. That's going to be the key number for every quarter. They produced 145. So actually, in my opinion, it's amazing that Tesla was actually able to deliver almost every vehicle that they made. I mean, think about it. Just in the last like week or so, you're going to have thousands and thousands of vehicles that Tesla delivers that they can't deliver because it's just a couple days before quarter, right? So there's got to be some leeway. So I think this is amazing that what they've done. A Model S and X was actually substantially higher because, you know, the factory is open most of the time. Model 3 and Y production was higher. You have Shanghai and also Fremont ramping Model Y. And then, you have a total end of quarter operating lease fees, vehicle count 61,000. Solar is increasing a bit, and storage is increasing as well for this quarter. So now you have a start of a good trend of increasing kind of solar and storage. You have store locations similar and mobile service fees similar, supercharger stations slightly up and connectors slightly up. Okay, so let's move on to vehicle capacity. So Tesla is outlining kind of how many cars that they can make. So in Fremont, it says we recently increased the capacity of Model 3 to 500,000 units, Model 3 and Model Y to 500,000 units a year. In order to do this, we started a second paint shop, installed the largest die casting machine in the world, and upgraded our Model Y general assembly line. Production should reach full capacity toward the end of this year or beginning of next year. So this is kind of interesting. They're saying that, you know, with Fremont, they're almost going to reach this 500,000 run rate, which is basically what, 10,000 Model 3 and Model Ys per week. And they're going to reach that by the end of the year or beginning of the next year. And then you also have the Model S and X that is made in Fremont as well. Next, Tesla says in Shanghai, the Model 3 production capacity has increased to 250,000 units a year. We reduced the price of the Model 3 to 250,000 RMB after incentives, making it the lowest price premium midsize sedan in China. This was enabled both by a lower cost battery and increased level of local procurement. As a result of the shift in cost and starting price, we recently added a third production shift to our Model 3 factory. Now, all of this information was kind of like leaked through various news articles. The third shift was added recently. I remember at Autonomy Day, I briefly had a conversation with Jerome Guillen, who's in charge of this factory, and he was saying how initially their strategy was to kind of ship a lot of the parts over to Shanghai, but over the course of a year or so, let's say 2020, that they're gradually shift their supply chain locally. And there's a lot of benefit to that too, because you save on shipping costs, but also the supply chain in China is very, very robust. You're going to get some great prices for your products. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, Tesla is finding a lot of success in their Shanghai plant. It's just, they're blowing it out of the park there. And now we have news that Tesla's shipping, right, Model 3s from Shanghai now, at least the standard range model, to Europe by the end of the year. And so this is fantastic news. Like, Shanghai is becoming an part of Tesla. All right, Berlin. So Berlin says, construction of the Gigafactory in Berlin continues to progress rapidly. Buildings are under construction and equipment move-in will start over the coming weeks. At the same time, Giga Berlin team continues to grow. Production is expected to start in 2021. Now, if you look at some YouTube videos, yeah, Berlin construction is going very, very fast, and it's very impressive. The rumors out there are saying that The production is slated to start probably in June 2021. Now, Tesla is not revealing this, hasn't really officially said anything, but that's kind of the rumors. And so if they do so, the big question mark is, A, if they're going to start Model Y production, which is that's the intended plan, and then they need cells. So Elon has admitted on Twitter that they're going to use 4680 cells. So how in the world are they going to actually produce the 4680 cells by this time frame, June of 2021, if in battery day they're saying, you know, they're still having some issues? So yeah, that's the big question. And I kind of lean on the theory that Tesla kind of sandbagged a little bit, kind of was conservative in terms of their timeline. I think Tesla is much farther along with their 4680 development than maybe what people realize. Okay, so here's what Tesla's showing. They have Fremont and they have Shanghai, right, at 250. They're not revealing capacity right now for Berlin or Texas, right? And then they also have the Semi and Roadster, all these guys in development. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to core technology. So here we are with autopilot and full self-driving. Our autopilot team has been focused on a fundamental architecture rewrite of our neural networks and control algorithms. This rewrite will allow the remaining driving features to be released. In October, we sent the first full self-driving software update enabled by the rewrite to a limited number of early access program users, city streets. As we continue to collect data over time, the system will become more robust. All right, this is double-sided here now. With the rewrite, people are like, oh my gosh, rewrite, great, great, great. But this also shows that the previous version kind of maxed out and their expectation, it didn't meet their expectations in terms of the ability, right, that their previous version was able to accomplish. So Tesla had to do a pivot in a sense and had to do a major rewrite. In the software world, you kind of typically try to avoid major or complete rewrites because it's just a major hassle and there's a lot of risks involved. But Tesla is launching this and it's because this is the only way, and this is the best way they feel they can go forward. And so, yeah, this whole robotaxi network by end of 2020, right? The first robotaxi is like, I was very doubtful of this. I don't think this is going to happen this year. Even next year is a question mark as the full self-driving features are just starting to roll out in beta. And so anyways, I'm extremely bullish on Tesla autopilot and robotaxi over time. It's just going to take some time. Vehicle software. New software functionality was introduced since the start of Q3. In order to make our product safer from unauthorized access, we introduced the ability to enable two-step verification via a smartphone. Additionally, among other updates, we improved active suspension comfort, updated power wall to vehicle charging coordination, and added an automated window close function and glove box pin access. Our Model Y all-wheel drive customers can now purchase a $2,000 software update that improves the 0 to 60 mile time to just 4.3 seconds. All right, battery and powertrain. On September 22nd, we hosted Tesla Battery Day. Now, this was a huge event. I think it's still underrated and misunderstood by a lot of people, where we described a path to reducing battery pack cost per kilowatt by 56%, enabling production of a profitable $25,000 vehicle. This, in our view, is a critical component to exceed cost parity with internal combustion engine vehicles. Additionally, due to a simple cell manufacturing process, we believe CapEx per gigawatt hour of battery capacity should decline by 69% compared to today's production process. In other words, Tesla can move faster. Tesla can build better battery factories, because it costs less to do so. And not just to build the factory, but the actual cost of the cells is significantly less, right? 56% less. This is huge. All right, other highlights, energy business. What's going on with Tesla Energy? Our energy storage business reached record deployments of 759 megawatt hours in Q3. All right, so that's almost a 3 gigawatt hour run rate, which is it's just growing, right? It's a good sign. Megawatt production continued to ramp at Gigafactory Nevada as production volumes more than doubled in Q3. All right, so they're saying that actually just in one quarter, the production volume of Megapack doubled, which is a big accomplishment. Powerwall demand remains strong and is growing, particularly in our solar business. As our solar business grows, as many customers include a Powerwall with their solar installation. Additionally, we are seeing accelerating interest in Powerwall as concerns with grid stability grow, particularly in California. We continue to believe that the energy business will ultimately be as large as our vehicle business. Now, what does this mean, as large as their vehicle business? Does it mean that it'll bring in as much revenue? I mean, maybe super long term it will be, but I think the angle Tesla has is actually the amount of gigawatts, right, or terawatt hours that the energy storage business contains will be, you know, as big, if not bigger, than their vehicle business over time. It doesn't necessarily mean within the next 10 years that the energy business is going to have more revenue, in my opinion. This is just what, my take. All right, our recently introduced strategy of low-cost solar, $1.49 per watt in the U.S. after tax credit, is starting to have an impact. Tesla solar deployments more than doubled in Q3 to 57 megawatts compared to the prior quarter, with solar roof deployments almost tripling sequentially. While not at scale yet, we recently demonstrated a 1.5-day solar roof install, as shown in the photos. For solar roof, installation time is a key area of focus to accelerate the growth of this program. We continue to onboard hundreds of electricians and roofers to grow this business. All right, the solar roof business is a messy business. This is construction. It's not the highest of margins. There's a lot of complexity, right? Permits and processes and all this stuff. And for Tesla to get into the business is actually, initially, I was quite shocked that they would actually be interested in it. But this is Elon's thing. He's not interested in just making money. He's interested in the bigger picture, right? Speeding up the world's transition to sustainable energy, which solar roofs is a big part of. And so a lot of the early years are investment years, right? Slow growth, low margins. But at a certain point, right, the product gets really good, the demand increases, and then you're going to see greater gross profits, and this will actually impact, I think, margin or profits over time. All right, now we go to outlook. Volume, we covered this a little bit. Let's go more into detail a bit here. It says that we have the capacity installed to produce and deliver 500,000 vehicles this year. While achieving this goal has become more difficult, delivering 500,000 vehicles in 2020 remains our target. Achieving this target depends primarily on quarter-over-quarter increases in Model Y and Shanghai production, as well as further improvements in logistics and delivery efficiency at higher volume levels. So 500,000 vehicles is still in the cards. It's not guaranteed, but that's kind of like, you know, their goal right now. Cash flow. We should have sufficient liquidity to fund our product roadmap, long-term capacity expansion plans, and other expenses. Well, with, yeah, $15 billion now in the bank, it's like, yeah, you're pretty well funded. Profit. For the trailing 12 months, we achieved an operating margin of 6.3%. We expect our operating margin will continue to grow over time, ultimately reaching industry-leading levels with capacity expansion and localization plans underway. In other words, Tesla has great operating leverage. They have low operating expenses that don't necessarily increase at the same pace as revenue does. Therefore, the more revenue they bring in, the more profit that they're going to accrue. And we're seeing this, right, starting with this this year, but also moving to next year, we're going to see that. I think Q4 is going to be a blowout because of that. Tesla's operating expenses are quite lean in comparison to other auto manufacturers. All right, product. We are currently building Model Y capacity. We are currently building Model Y capacity at Gigafactory Shanghai, Gigafactory Berlin, and Gigafactory Texas, and remain on track to start deliveries from each location in 2021. Tesla Semi deliveries will also begin in 2021. We continue to significantly invest in our product roadmap. Okay, so yeah, basically they're saying that everything's on track. Here's battery day highlights they go through. We know a lot of this stuff. I won't go into detail, but here's kind of a summary. I think Tesla is saying that the battery day was super important, more important than people realize. Therefore, they go ahead. They're showing how Tesla is going to improve the cell design. The cell factory, the anode material, the cathode material, the cell-to-vehicle integration, which we know, you know, combines the batteries into the actual frame of the car. And we have different parts. So we have range increase, you have the dollar per kilowatt hour cost reduction, and then you have the CapEx reduction, right? How much it costs to build a factory. And so each part of these parts will increase the range of the battery, but also decrease the cost of the battery. Right, so you have a whopping, you know, 56% in reduction of battery costs, but also 69% reduction in the cost it costs to build a factory, a battery factory. All right, let's go on to photos and charts. Here we have Gigafactory Shanghai. Here's the Model Y factory in the foreground. I'm guessing it's right here, the Model 3 factory back there. Here you have a Gigafactory Shanghai. You have the Model Y die-cast. Wow, that's a big, big machine there. Yeah, this is the one-piece die-casting machine. Then you have Gigafactory Shanghai, the Model Y body shop. All right, so when is Model Y going to start production in Shanghai? I think it's going to happen before the beginning of this year, much faster than what is anticipated. Here's the Gigafactory Model Y paint shop. Now, this looks ready to go, right? This doesn't look like it's being constructed. It looks like they're already testing the paint and everything. Here's Gigafactory Berlin, Model Y factory construction. So the focus of Berlin right now is Tesla saying, hey, it's Model Y. And Elon and Twitter said, hey, we're going to put 4680 cells into Model Y in Berlin. And so look at the factory right now. This factory is like, it's coming up very, very fast, right? I mean, this is like, yeah, this is incredible, the pace. And I wouldn't be surprised, like, you know, by February or March, you see this thing like, you know, pretty much wrapping up construction. And so Tesla must be, you know, pushing the envelope in terms of trying to get 4680 cells. These are the new cells, right? They need to ramp production of these cells to match the timeline of this factory, right? It makes no sense to build a factory when you can't build enough cells to build cars, right? These go hand in hand. And so Tesla is completely like matching the timeline of the 4680 cell line that they're going to have to make for this factory with the factory itself. And that's why I think, Battery Day was a little bit sandbagged a bit. All right, here's Gigafactory Texas in Austin, and it's coming together very fast. A lot of the work, you know, was preparing the ground, but after that, you know, foundation, all this stuff is going to go up very fast. Here's a mega pack project at Moss Landing. All right, they're dropping in these huge mega packs. And then you have some key metrics. You have vehicle deliveries. This is obviously trending up. You have, you know, almost 140,000 delivered last quarter. And in Q4, you might have, you know, up to 180,000 vehicles delivered. That's what I think 181,000 or so is going to, it's going to take to get to 500,000 vehicles. All right. Here's operating cash flow and free cash flow going up. And then you have net income in $1 billion. You see the past five quarters, Tesla has reported a positive GAAP profit. And this is going to cause some type of, you know, decision for the S&P 500 committee. Are they going to allow Tesla to join the index, invite them to, or not? Tesla has already surpassed the whole the cumulative profit for the GAAP profit for the last four quarters being profitable. Including the last quarter. So Tesla has met all the requirements. It's really just up to the S&P 500 to decide when Tesla is going to enter the index. All right, so again, we have the last 12 months, Tesla's vehicle deliveries trailing, operating cash flow, and net income. You see this huge kind of uptrend in terms of their net income as well. All right, financial statements. Here we have, we went through a lot of this stuff actually earlier in the shareholder letter, but the key numbers are, when I look at it, is you have revenue, right? So revenue is, a lot of it is the auto sales, but you have some other stuff here, and you have total revenue of $8.7 billion. Now, the second thing you want to look at is kind of the cost of revenue. And here you have the cost of revenue for the auto sales here, and the total cost of revenues is 6.7. This is all of the costs it takes to make the car. So with Tesla, is the costs are divided up into two things. So one is the cost of revenue, which is, let's say, all your factory workers and all the people assembling the car, right, bringing all the parts there, and, you know, everything it takes to manufacture, right, the car. They have some other parts of their business as well, but that's the concept. So at Fremont, let's say they have, you know, 10,000 workers or more, all of that, or most of those people go into cost of revenue, their salaries, because they're making the cars. Obviously, Tesla has some engineers that are doing some other stuff. Now, the second kind of cost or expenses that Tesla has is called operating expenses. Now, these are the expenses that Tesla has that isn't completely directly related to the actual manufacturing of a car at hand. So, for example, they have engineers who are designing future products, or you have salespeople, right, who are, you know, manning store locations, or you have admin people, right, in offices, etc. All of this stuff isn't necessarily directly, these aren't the people making the cars, right, in the factory, etc. So these expenses are called operating expenses. And these go into a completely separate section. And for Tesla, they divide it up into two parts. One is called research and development, which, or R&D, right? And the second is called selling, general, and administrative, right, SG&A. So these are the two main categories. R&D, this is all of the engineers, right? All of the expenses that Tesla's investing into the future, more better battery developments, autonomy, all their just, you know, new vehicle design and all this stuff. This all goes under R&D. And then the selling, general, and administrative is basically every other expense, right? Every other personnel that Tesla has, this goes into the SG&A line. So for Tesla, this expense was $366 for R&D million and $888 million for SG&A. But here's the catch. This SG&A figure actually includes the stock-based compensation of $290 million for Elon Musk's CEO compensation plan, the 2018 plan. So this actual figure is actually quite lower than that, right? And so Tesla, so it's bloated at $1.25 billion, but it's bloated in the sense that it has the stock-based compensation, but this is actually a super lean number. If you take the operating expenses that Tesla had, let's say like 3 years ago or so, even like, you know, 2017 or so, yeah, check it out. Like, their operating expenses were probably around $1 billion still per quarter. So Tesla, over the past 3 or 4 years, even though they've ramped up all these new products, right, with the Model 3, now with the Model Y, they're doing like Shanghai, they're coming out with Cybertruck and Semi and all these things, their operating expenses have not grown very much. And there's a few factors for this. First, Tesla is extremely disciplined and extremely focused on cost cutting. They have a fantastic CFO, Zach Kirkhorn, who has been, you know, religious in his focus to bring down costs. But this is the amazing thing, is usually when you bring down costs, research and development and a lot of your future efforts and current products even, they stall, right? Because you're cutting out all your future, right? But here's the thing, how is it possible that Tesla is able to not really substantially increase their operating expenses in the past, let's say 3 years or so, or 4 years even, but yet they're able to do so much innovation, right? That is the amazing thing about Tesla's financial statements here, is that they've cut so much out, they cut all of the fat out of their company, yet they've kept the core innovation, right? They kept their autonomy teams, they kept their battery development teams, they kept their new vehicle design teams, you know, even their solar roof teams, all this stuff is new innovation. They've kept that by while remaining lean. So even though, for example, Model 3 production ramp was hell, according to Elon, it really disciplined Tesla to focus on what was really important with expenses. And as a result, now that the revenue is growing substantially, now they're taking advantage of this discipline because their operating expenses are so lean. Even with Elon Musk's CEO compensation plan, right, it's still just $1.2 billion in a quarter. But if you look at what they're making, their gross profit was $2 billion, meaning take the revenue and minus the cost of that revenue, right, to make that revenue, they're making $2 billion, right, in gross profit. All they need to do is cover their expenses and then what's left over is profit. So their expenses are super lean, right? They're like, without the CEO compensation plan, it's like $1 billion. So you're making $1 billion right now, generally speaking, off of, right, their gross profit. Of course, Tesla has some additional expenses. So let's look at what these additional expenses are. So here you have interest income and interest expense and other income. So Tesla does have some, you know, other expenses. For example, here's $163 million in like interest income. So Tesla has some loans out, right? They've got some convertible debt out where they're paying some interest, etc. It's not a significant number in the bigger picture, but yet, you know, this does damper the earnings a bit. But it makes sense, right? If you're growing as fast as Tesla and you can get super cheap interest rates, you know, why not borrow some money? So even without all of this, right, even with all of this, you have a GAAP profit of $331 million. But this GAAP profit is somewhat misleading because, right, it incorporates all of the stock-based compensation, not just for Elon, but also for Tesla employees. What this means is Tesla gives out some of like the compensation to their employees as stock-based, right? Options and compensation. And the And what this does is it helps, it motivates their employees, et cetera. It doesn't really cost Tesla in the sense of they're issuing more shares. So there's dilution to existing shareholders, but yet it's not really, you know, costing Tesla, you know, a specific expense. So the difference between GAAP and non-GAAP, one of the main differences is with GAAP, it will actually include all of the stock-based compensation charges. So, you know, probably over $500 million in stock-based compensation is included in GAAP. In non-GAAP, you have all of that like not included. So in order to calculate non-GAAP, you will remove that stock-based compensation, right, of $500 million or so. And now you have a non-GAAP profit of $800 and something billion. Like, this is close to $1 billion in a single quarter, right? Off of what, $8.7 billion in revenue. What this is showing is it's forecasting the humongous profit-making potential of Tesla, right? Because if you have a company that has lean operating expenses, and their revenue is like just growing rapidly. Let's say their revenue is growing at 50%, right, year over year, especially if you grow, let's say your delivery is 50% year over year, perhaps your revenue will grow. Maybe let's say 40%, you know, maybe more, because maybe the average selling price per vehicle might be slightly lower as you expand volumes, right, going to, you know, down markets or cheaper markets, et cetera. But nevertheless, what this is showing is that what Tesla is doing here by getting $2 billion in gross profit and close to $1 billion in non-GAAP profit or operating profit. I mean, this stuff is amazing, right? And this is what, you know, Tesla was trying to tell people about, trying to show people about in the past that, hey, they've got a fantastic business, but most people just couldn't believe it and they had to wait for it to actually show up, for it to be real. And I don't think a lot of people are still getting it. I think it's still gonna take time for people to get, especially as revenue goes up, their profits are going to increase as well. Now, here's a question for Tesla going forward: is like, how much should they increase their operating expenses? Because if you keep your operating expenses too low, you might not be investing enough into the future. So, you know, I expect with all of this profit now that Tesla is accruing, for Tesla to start spending a bit more in R&D, because this is going to be good for their business. It's the right thing for Tesla to do. All right, here we have the balance sheet here, and you have Tesla coming in with current assets of cash and current assets about $14.5 billion. Now, that's kind of the key number, is how much cash do they have in the bank? And that's $14.5 billion. They've got other stuff here that they're putting on their asset on their balance sheet. They have some current liabilities. Their accounts payable is, you know, close to $5 billion, but then they have accrued liability, deferred revenue, et cetera. And so overall, you know, Tesla, yeah, here's our statement of cash flow here now. So overall, you have net cash provided by operating expenses. You have, it's like, what, $2.4 billion. Net cash used in investing is $1 billion. So basically, Tesla's raised $2.4 billion in operating or through their business during last quarter, but they had to spend $1 billion for CapEx, which is, this is the money they spent with Berlin, with Shanghai, with Austin, with, you know, getting these like Roadrunner lines up. And so they're spending heavily with these new factories and expansion, yet they're bringing in so much more money than even they're spending. Now, this is like, this is another bullish sign for Tesla. All right. Yeah, so here's a reconciliation of GAAP to non-GAAP. So here's the thing that, you know, the main thing about how to do this is you have GAAP, and then you have basically the main thing is the stock-based compensation expense. And so the GAAP profit is 331. The stock-based compensation, right, is $543 million that Tesla booked. So therefore, right, you have to add that back into the non-GAAP profits, right, of 870 something million. You have something of a buyout of non-controlling assets, so there's something else that's added into it, and then you have the net income. I think generally speaking, even though GAAP profit is, you know, important for the S&P 500 inclusion, typically I think most investors will look more at non-GAAP profit, because I think it's a better indication of what the actual kind of operating profit what kind of money, right, the company is actually making. So for Tesla to bring in close to $1 billion in non-GAAP profit is fantastic. It's amazing that what Tesla has done in this quarter. You have additional information. All right. We'll go ahead and what we'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll start answering some questions from viewers. Actually, let's go ahead and I want to look at the stock price here. Yeah, so let's go ahead and I'm going to delete this. And I have not looked at the stock price since I've been going through the shareholder letter. Okay, so now we have the stock price. You have it went up to $437 immediately. Now the stock price went down to $428, and now it's at $431. So the stock is actually up only $8. So up, what, 2% or so. This is actually a pretty muted response, I think, for this shareholder letter. In my opinion, like, I just don't see a ton of negative news out of this shareholder letter because, you know, Tesla is basically saying, hey, we're running on, you know, I would say all cylinders, but whatever. We're pushing the envelope. We're growing as fast as we can. We're selling all the vehicles that we can. And we have amazing expansion plans for next quarter, but also next year and onward. We are in the, you know, the leading position in terms of growth with electric vehicles and the transition to sustainable energy. So there's not a ton of negative stuff. I think the big question that probably investors have is the whole valuation question, right? Is Tesla overvalued for what they're, you know, doing right now? So Tesla's market cap, right, is what, about $400 billion at this moment. And so the question is like, A, is Tesla worth $400 billion or is it worth $300 billion or $200 or $500 or $600 billion? Like, that's kind of the main question that I think a lot of investors have. With this quarter, I mean, I think, you know, it's like Tesla makes a case that that they are just starting their growth story, right? And so a lot of it is how many years ahead do you want to look at to include in your valuation kind of calculations. I think personally, it's going to depend on each investor and it's going to depend also on the macro environment. How much are investors paying for growth in the overall market, right? If investors in the overall market are paying a ton, right, very high multiples for growth companies, then that's going to translate into what people pay for Tesla. And I think that's been one of the main factors for Tesla's stock price appreciation this year, is with the massive liquidity that's been brought into the markets from the Fed and elsewhere. And you also have an international, you know, investing environment where people from around the world are looking to U.S. stocks as kind of a safe haven, as a place where, you know, there can be growth, but relatively safe growth. And so you have billions, if not trillions of dollars coming into U.S. stocks. You have the Fed backstopping the market and saying, hey, we're going to do anything it takes with quantitative easing, buying up assets, et cetera, to shore up the market. And I think that has a huge impact on the mentality of the stock market, on the ability of these growth stocks to attract investors. And so if you look at growth stocks, tech stocks especially with this pandemic, you'll see across the board that they've done very, very well, right, this year. And I think overall Tesla has been a recipient of that as well. Now, the big question is, okay, does that translate into the future? Let's say next year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, are investors still going to give kind of these high valuations, these optimistic valuations to tech stocks, to growth stocks? Now, this is a two-sided, you know, kind of dilemma or equation here. On one side, you have very low interest rates, and the Fed has kind of insinuated that these interest rates are going to be low for quite a while. When you have an extended period of super low interest rates, there just isn't a ton of other options where you can make your money or make good returns off of your money. Like, where do you put your money? You put your money in like bonds or interest rates. Like it's just, you're not going to get much. You can put your money in real estate, which I think is actually an interesting play. It's just that there's a lot of, there's much more, I guess, maintenance, or you have to get more involved. I guess you can buy certain, you know, real estate, you know, investment trusts, et cetera. But I think the most appealing asset class is equities. And because of that, especially with low interest rates, there's been not just a flooding of money into the market for equities, but you could make a strong case that in the future, also, as long as interest rates remain low, that money will still flow into the equity markets and still, you know, boost up and hold up these kind of high multiples for tech stocks. On the flip side, you can make, you know, a whole different case where you could say, you can make a whole case that, you know, interest rates actually can spike. You could, you know, I personally, I'm just not convinced of that as kind of like a very convincing scenario, but, you know, you could make that case. And you can make the case that, you know, these stocks are just bloated, overvalued. You look at the case this past week, Fastly reduced their guidance and their stock tanked like at least 30%, right? Maybe even 40% just in a period of a week because, you know, they weren't able to meet their guidance. And so there's high expectations that are built into these stocks that are growing very fast. And I think that's something, you know, that investors need to think about. All right. I want to go ahead and answer some questions for you guys already. It's already 2:00. We've got some time before the earnings call. All right. We'll go ahead and I'll just put up some, you know, different questions from viewers in the live chat right now. I'll answer what I can. If you want to ask a question, go ahead and do it. I just don't have a ton of reading space here, so I'll miss most of the questions. I'm sorry about that. So I'll answer, you know, a few or as many as I can. All right, Jeffrey Williams says, please address the fact that this is a regulatory credits business, not a car or tech company. Yeah, so, I mean, if you take a company that has gross profits of like $1 billion, right? You have operating profits, right, of $1 billion. So you have non-GAAP profit of close to $900 million, right? That is far, far higher than all of the regulatory credits that they sold last quarter, right? If you take all of the regulatory credits that they sold last quarter, I mean, do they even, let's check out how much here's the regulatory credits. So Tesla breaks it down. They sold $397 million in regulatory credits, right? Okay, a few things. First, Tesla is not hiding the amount of regulatory credits they're selling. They're actually, you know, transparent with it. They're saying, hey, we sold $400 million in regulatory credits last quarter. So a few things about this. First, their non-GAAP income is like almost $900 million. So they still make like $500 million even with this, without the sale of these regulatory credits. Second, these regulatory credits, I think, are more stable than a lot of people realize. Zach Kirkhorn gave some guidance in one of the shareholder letters, I think the quarter report, saying that they forecast relatively stable and, you know, slightly growing regulatory credits, right, in the near to medium term. Long term, we're talking 5, 10, 15 years down the road, like these credits will probably, you know, fade out over time. But in the meantime, you have increased kind of regulations from the European Union where they're making it harder for existing ICE manufacturers to sell their cars. And they have, you know, they're adopting these emission credit standards or systems like what California has. And California is very serious about this too. They're trying to ban all IC, right, new car sales from the year 2035. Now, here's the problem. You could say, oh, that's just California, that's just EU. But that's actually not the case because all of this stuff is interrelated. If you're a car manufacturer, right, like California is a huge market. EU is a huge market, right? This affects a lot of your sales and you have to reformulate your whole car lineup. And so with this stuff of regulatory sales, this actually is a very, very like big trend that's not going away anytime soon. This income that Tesla is getting is actually very solid income, and it's income Tesla's getting because other car manufacturers aren't doing their role or their responsibilities to actually meet the emission requirements that these governments are setting up. So let's say, okay, who cares? Fine. Let's say Tesla gets zero regulatory credits. They're still making $500 million or so in non-GAAP profit. And that's fantastic for a company. And this is just Q3. Wait until Q4 when Tesla delivers an additional, let's say, 40,000 vehicles. Now you're talking about, you know, revenue of over $10 billion. You're talking a gross profit will be a lot higher. It's just what Tesla is doing right now. You have to think about the bigger picture. Tesla has goals to sell 10 to 20 million vehicles, right, in a decade or so per year. And what they're doing right now in 2020 is just kind of like the starting point. It's just the first steps. And you can't expect Tesla, right, who's selling like 500,000 vehicles this year, to post like, you know, tens of billions of dollars of profit, right? They're still a amazingly fast-growing company that's investing so much money of their money into, right, new projects, et cetera. And so, yeah, Tesla, in my opinion, I think this whole argument that Tesla is being bloated up or propped up by these regulatory credits that they're selling is not really a substantial argument, in my opinion. I think that if the S&P 500 is buying into this argument, which I think there's a possibility, I really think they need to rethink this. I think Q4 is just going to show it very clearly that, you know, Tesla's business is just ramping and they're just increasing their revenue and their profits. And their regulatory credits is a very small part of their overall business, right? $400 million compared to $8.7 billion in overall revenue, right? What is that? That's like 5% or so, right, of their overall revenue comes from credit sales. If it was like 50% of their overall revenue comes from like regulatory credit sales, yeah, fine, you know, that's a big thing. But if it's less than like, if it's like 5% of your revenue comes from regulatory credit sales, that's small. And it's going to be an increasingly small portion of Tesla's overall revenue as they increase, right, their revenue going forward. All right, let's take Jax. When are robo-taxis coming? Yeah, you know what? I think it's going to be tough to have the full-blown kind of like robo-taxi where, you know, there's no steering wheel at all, right? And the taxi just, you know, takes people everywhere. It's going to be difficult to see that, I think, within the next, you know, 1 to 2 years or so. I think, you know, this whole full self-driving, the path to autonomy is a very challenging path, and Tesla has a lot of hurdles to overcome. That said, I think it's going to happen, right, this robo-taxi network, and it's going to surprise people, and it's going to become perhaps the driving factor for Tesla's, like, growth in valuation, probably more in the, like, mid-decade to later decade of this decade. So, I foresee, like, the next couple of years, like, Tesla's going to be pushing it out, and they'll have their doubters and naysayers and skeptics with autonomy and robo-taxis. But at a certain point, and it's kind of unclear, but I would expect somewhere between like year 2 and 3 or so, maybe 4, like, I think at some point, this stuff just starts to work, and it starts to work like better than people expect it to work, right? And once it starts doing that, and they actually start to roll out some robo-taxis in certain cities and they start to cover certain areas, people will start to be just floored. They'll be like, oh my gosh, like, what is this, right? These are self-driving cars that just take people anywhere. And then the whole wheels are spinning in people's heads where they're saying, okay, wow, this is a different business than even their auto manufacturing business. So how much can they make out of this robo-taxi business? And if you do the numbers, it's like transportation is a humongous field, right? And this becomes more of a transportation as a service play. And I think, and there's no really like strong, like, second place competitor that's head to head with Tesla at this moment. So I think because of that, yeah, Tesla has opportunity to really like capture the imagination of investors as robo-taxi comes on board. And so this is one of the reasons why, like, you know, I'm personally kind of excited about Tesla's future going forward, not just with cars, but you have robo-taxis kind of becoming a huge growth opportunity. And then I think later on you have kind of, in my opinion, within 5 to 10 years, Tesla will come out with increasingly dominant energy storage breakthroughs. And this has always been kind of my thesis or my hunch back, you know, when I started investing in Tesla. But the theory is, if Tesla can continue to dominate and sell, right, these electric vehicles, make profit, cash flows, reinvest the profit, and Elon can continue to push the envelope in terms of innovation, in that case, I think Tesla can become like the dominant player in terms of realizing the vast majority of innovation in the energy storage business. And if that's the case, and Tesla can really achieve a true energy storage breakthrough in 5 or 10 years that just really dominates the whole industry, you're looking at a whole growth field in the 2030s, from 2030 to 2040, that's just like, yeah, which is, it's just, it would be amazing. So it's like kind of hard to find a company that has, you know, a possible, you know, great growth period in the next 10 years, but also following that, they have great growth possibilities the following 10 years. Now, a lot has to go right for all of that to happen. And I don't take anything for granted, right? If Elon Musk is out of the picture, that becomes a much more difficult thing to accomplish. There's a lot of different, you know, risk factors as well. And I think it's easy for people just to say, oh, you know, Tesla is for sure going to be, right, the most valuable company in the world. And that, I don't think that's the case. There's nothing for sure, right, in this world. There's always major risks involved. But considering those risks, you know, and if Tesla can continue to execute toward their vision, they have, you know, a complete open field, a wide open field of growth ahead for the next two decades. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at some of this stuff here. Matthew TX says, Tesla network with human drivers in Q4 or 2021. So yeah, here's a theory, which is like, hey, why can't Tesla release a Uber competitor or a Lyft competitor with human drivers? I talked about this in a video where I just think that it just adds so much complication. There's so much cost involved in recruiting drivers. It's the human part of that whole equation that just messes up everything, right? I mean, Uber and Lyft have spent billions and billions of dollars, right, to create the networks they've had, because it's complicated and costly to bring on all these drivers on board and to achieve a certain kind of point where you're blanketed a complete area or metro area, especially. In Tesla's case, you know, one option is they could do more of like a Turo model where they allow Tesla owners to rent out their cars. So if they rent out their cars, then it becomes more like kind of a rental network where people can rent out their cars for a day or time or several hours at a time. But in my opinion, that type of network doesn't really have a ton of like fantastic, doesn't have like a ton of fantastic profit and growth right away. And that's where with the whole Turo network idea, I'm like, I'm okay with that. And it's okay for Tesla to do it, I think, to learn about kind of having a network of letting people borrow their cars. But in my opinion, it's like, it's all just kind of whatever Tesla needs to do to build the building blocks for Tesla to release their robotaxi network, which won't require drivers. Like that is the holy grail. When you don't need any drivers, that will blow people's mind, right? And it could be actually one of the most amazing innovation accomplishments in the next decade, right? To have completely driverless cars going around. I think people still are not completely grasping all of this. Sung FP3 says, Dave, can you explain how data collection on owners driving and how is that going to help the company make profit? Is Tesla going into insurance company? Yeah, so Tesla has been upfront with this. They do have an insurance, right, a division in their company. They use data, right, and driving data from their drivers. And it's kind of like one of those things where it's a slow process because insurance is like heavily regulated. It's like each state has their own kind of regulation boards. And I mean, this is a massively kind of human capital intense area for Tesla to go into to set up. Basically, they're making a whole new company, right? An insurance company. And I don't think per se we can expect super fast growth right away. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing Tesla taking methodical kind of steps to growing this insurance business that they think is going to be crucial for things going forward. I think especially for the robotaxi network, if Tesla can have an insurance product that covers all of their cars, that's going to be a huge competitive advantage. Over time though, yeah, Tesla can offer auto insurance to all of their people. I think data is key. And, you know, it's all about risk analysis, right? Figuring out which drivers, right, have more risk versus other drivers. And Tesla can do it the best with the data. The question mark I have for Tesla is like, hey, wait a minute. Can Tesla expand, right, out of even auto insurance into other forms of insurance too? And I think that's definitely a possibility, but you've got kind of these like a little bit of a paranoia with monopolies going on, right? And the larger a company becomes, especially when they break the $1 trillion, you know, valuation mark, you have a lot of people who attack that company, claim it's a monopoly, want to break up that company. And so you need to tread kind of more carefully at a certain point. If you're kind of a scrappy startup, you can have ambitious plans to take over the world in every single industry in the world. No one really cares, right? But if you're a $1 trillion company, and you blatantly, openly say you're going to take over all these industries in the world, then you've got all of these enemies all of a sudden, right? So I think in that sense, Tesla needs to choose their battles and really needs to focus on, you know, what they need to focus on. But yeah, auto insurance, yeah, definitely they're working on it. It's going to be something that they grow over time, and it's going to be an important part of Tesla, in my opinion. All right, Royce Young says, Dave, do you ever think Tesla would... do you think Tesla would ever partner with Uber or Lyft? I don't know if Tesla would need Uber or Lyft, because Tesla, you know, if they have the whole product, right? They've got the hardware, they've got the software, they've got the autonomous driving. I don't know if they really would need an extra network per se of human drivers, unless it's like in the beginning process where Tesla doesn't have full blanket coverage of a certain area. They can maybe supplement it with the Uber or Lyft type of human driver. But once Tesla is able to get a blanket coverage with their autonomous cars, you know, it's just a matter of just pumping out the cars, right? If they solve the autonomous driving problem, I don't know if they would need Uber or Lyft. It just adds complexity to the whole equation. In my opinion, probably the smartest thing to do for Tesla is to roll out autonomous driving, you know, as they have it, but to blanket the areas that they roll it out with so that they have full coverage, so they don't need to, you know, kind of rely on other type of solutions. All right, Ishan Isku says, Dave, hey, how can Tesla compete with Hummer? What do you say? Yeah, the Hummer electric car was revealed yesterday. And couple of good questions here. Okay, the electric Hummer. I watched the reveal, I looked at the specs, and it just lacks the innovation. It lacks kind of like that early adopter appeal. Like, I don't see hundreds of thousands of people lining up for the electric Hummer, right? It just seems like they took an old IC car and they tried to, you know, do it up with some nice tech, etc., but they haven't reimagined the entire experience like Tesla has. The Cybertruck, in my opinion, is like underrated. It just drives amazing. Like, I took a test ride in the Cybertruck at the reveal, and the first thing I noticed was like, man, this Cybertruck, it drives like a Tesla. Like, literally, it accelerates like a Tesla. It's smooth like a Tesla. It's not like a rickety truck. It's like smooth. It drives like a Tesla, accelerates like a Tesla. You're like, man, what is this car, right? This is crazy. But it's huge. Like, this Cybertruck is like massive. It's like when the Cybertruck is driving up, especially at night with its headlights, and you see this massive car, you're like, what is that? Is that a tank? Is that a truck? Or what the heck is that? And you're just scared of it because you don't know what's going to pop out of this car. Tesla has completely reimagined, right, a truck. I mean, it's like no longer a truck. It's what, a armored, you know, personal vehicle. Armored personal carrier. It's a different category in a sense. And I think because of that, it's like, it's going to be hard to compete with Tesla, especially when they had the advantages of battery costs and manufacturing, right? Advantages, the whole vertical supply chain. They've got the brand and the marketing. All of these factors are just now feeding off of each other, making every single car that Tesla produces now that much more competitive and that much more appealing. Like, that is the key that Tesla needs to go down, right, to lower price market. They need to have a stronger value proposition, because as they go down to these lower cost markets, it becomes more competitive. Like, you have, you know, so many car companies putting out their best products, you know, putting out their Toyota Camrys and their Accords and all these like small SUVs, all this stuff. And Tesla needs to really lay it down to make it convincing for people to switch to a different platform, right? An EV platform. And I think Tesla understands that they need to reinvent, right, their products. They need to have a super strong value proposition. It needs to be awesomely better than anything else out there. And that's what Tesla has done with the Cybertruck. That's what they've done with the Model 3, Model Y, etc. With the $25,000 Tesla, I think that's what's going to happen. And as long as Tesla executes and things go well for Tesla, it's looking very bright, especially for their new markets. Where is Polenta? Hey, Dave, do you see Tesla pursuing smart HVAC systems anytime soon? Yeah, I think Tesla definitely will pursue HVAC. The whole question is all timing. Like, when's the right time to do so? I think Elon knows that this is a huge problem. HVAC, there is an institutional question. I hope Elon answers it at the earnings call, where it's saying that, hey, these heating air conditioning systems, they contribute an immense amount to the carbon emissions problem. When and what can Tesla do to get involved? I think that's the angle that Elon wants to get involved with. Basically, he says, hey, when you run your air conditioning, 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, or even more in some places in the summer, that's a humongous amount of energy that's consumed. And of that, there's a lot of stuff is being burned to make that energy in a lot of places, in a lot of states. If Tesla can come in with a very efficient HVAC system that you're able to turn on just certain parts of the room and it's super quiet and super efficient, and it really reduces, let's say, the cost to run an air conditioning by, let's say, 80% or so, and Tesla can roll this out in the millions, right, per year, or tens of millions per year, this can actually make a very big difference with carbon emissions. And I think that's the angle that Elon is approaching this whole problem. And the question is, hey, when can we get enough kind of breathing room, because we have all these new products and all this stuff, where we can put people focus on this to really roll it out? Because it's not going to be like a pretty business. Like this is kind of like getting into these equipment, maybe an installation. Like these are extremely complex, not super high margin businesses that most high tech companies are not going to want to get involved with, right? If it wasn't for the greater mandate of Tesla, I don't think Elon would be that interested in HVAC. But Elon will do it even if there doesn't seem to be great margins in the beginning. He knows that with innovation, they can improve the product, really delight their customers, solve big problems, and over time, right, this is going to be a big business if they can do it right. So I think that's Elon's perspective. I think my prediction, my estimate, I don't know. I would expect Tesla to maybe announce something in the next couple of years. All right, guys, it's already 2:15, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap up this live stream. I had a fantastic time with you guys. Can't believe there's over 4,300 people viewing it live at this moment. Fantastic. I'm going to go ahead and stream the earnings call, which is going to happen at 2:30 p.m. in 15 minutes or so. I'm going to stream it live. I'll keep up kind of this stock ticker right here on the screen. You guys can check it out. Go ahead. And if you're a new subscriber or new viewer, check out my channel. We're looking at different investment topics, always trying to ask deeper questions, trying not to just go with emotions or the herd, but trying to get to the surface of things. I had this thought today. A lot of investing, it's a result of our thinking, right? It's our thinking that kind of creates frameworks and perspectives, and it creates these habits and et cetera, and decisions that ultimately affect and impact the investing decisions and finance decisions that we make. And so ultimately, if you think about it, investing really is a thinking game. It's how you think. And a lot of times I think people, don't put enough time and energy to develop the skills to really think deeply, to think from different angles and to analyze. But anyways, that's the whole purpose and gist of my channel. And so hoping that, a video like this live stream can be helpful, right, to look at things from different angles. Anyways, I hope to see you guys later, and we'll see you guys in my next video. Thanks.